Anamnesis. Noun. Loss of forgetfulness. Medicine. A case history obtained by asking questions of a patient. Platonism. Recollection of knowledge acquired by the soul in other incarnations. Christianity. Liturgical statements memorializing the Last Supper, Passion, Resurrection, and Ascension. Immunology. A rapid and effective immune response to a previously encountered antigen. Part 1. The Narrow Path. It was a rainy day in Lacana National Park, and Bonnie stood on a forest trail in a green plastic poncho. Drops of water ran down the side of her face and off her chin. She was lean and tan from her months in the Colombian rainforest. Her people in Winnipeg would marvel at her appearance if she sent them back a photo. Bonnie felt disengaged living in Canada, but in the Amazon she existed fully in the present. It was not a matter of choice. Working in the rainforest was dangerous, and she needed to stay aware. Her instincts kept her safe as she climbed trees, searching for red jay nests. Her inner voice spoke clearly, but lately it frightened her with some of the things it said. She stood frozen on the trail, lost in an internal debate about which way to go. To the east was the route back to her camp. She was done with her fieldwork for the day and due back. To the west lay the corner of the park where she found juvenile red jays living together in another bird's abandoned nest. Louis, the head of the field study, was ecstatic when she discovered the juvenile band. The red jay is a close relative of the American crow, whose young live together until they find mates and claim territory. 5 red jay young living together was a sign of health for the species. But then Louis spotted loggers working at the western border of the park, less than a kilometer from the nest, and he forbade her from going near the area. Hello and welcome, I'm Douglas Bowles, and this is 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and distributed by thesyncbook.com. You can find our archives at 42minutes.com, and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. You can also follow our tweet at Sync42 and at SyncBook. It's Sunday, September 18th, 2016, and tonight we hope to have a loss of forgetfulness, or an anamnesis, which also happens to be a new book by SyncBook Plus member William Kiefer. Occultists have long prophesied a time when mystical forces will lift humanity to its potential. In a world on the brink of ruin, those who oppose civilization's destructive course will find themselves favored by the luck of Jupiter. In the Amazon, there is an endangered bird the local people say holds the fabric of existence together. When commercial development threatens the red jay's refuge, a young Canadian scientist gains a mysterious ability to bring misfortune to oilmen and loggers. As her enemies multiply, ayahuasca shamans come to her aid, but all the magic of the rainforest may not save the red jay. A continent away in New York, the Invisible Army plans a massive data heist to expose corruption and spark a populist revolt. Synchronicities swirl around the hackers as if the universe is guiding their gamble, but they must evolve their own consciousness before the revolution can succeed. Meanwhile, a Republican runs for president on her promise to launch a new invasion into the Middle East. When her epileptic daughter starts talking to angels, what the angels say make her uneasy. As the reality we know unravels, fear and love are evenly matched on Earth, and only awakened hearts can tip the balance. Anamnesis is Mr. Kiefer's first novel, which can be found on Amazon in both print and digital versions. We've chatted with him in the past on Member Hangouts, but now find ourselves very pleased to catch up with him for 42 minutes. How are you doing tonight, William?
I'm doing great, Doug. Good to be here.
Well, great. And so I had no idea. So you wrote a book. I mean, what kind of inspiration does it take for, I mean, I had that same kind of inspiration, but, you know, what was it that sparked this novel?
Man, you know, it's been a long journey, 13 years, many rewrites. You know, it was sort of like a combination of 9/11, Iraq War, you know, seeing The Matrix. I just had this idea that, you know, I wanted to make some kind of art that talked about, you know, consciousness change and maybe helped inspire it a bit. So, you know, I it took me a long time to do the first draft, you know, 7 years just writing, you know, an hour here and there. Definitely not every day, but gained more momentum recently and sort of overhauled the book. It was earlier version of the book was called Heaven is Empty. And that was sort of after 10 years, that's what I had. And it was kind of like a depressing tale. And I decided to give it more of a, you know, inspirational message. And this is what came out of that, the last few years of work.
The title kind of tickles me in a Philip K. Dick sort of way. Because mm-hmm. I think, is anamnesis kind of a Gnostic term?
Yeah, I think so. And it's, you know, definitely Dick mentions it in quite a few books. And that's actually where I first heard it. You know, I read Valis only a couple of years ago, and it just sort of blew my mind. And you know, it sort of a theme of my book is, you know, remembering that there's sort of a better way for humans to do things. And maybe we had a better idea of it at different times in the past. So, you know, just remembrance of that and remembrance of, you know, what our potential can be.
Now, these red jays kind of appear to be at the heart of this thing. I mean, they're even called the heart bird.
Right.
Is this something that you created for the story, or is this a real thing? Are they a real thing?
These are fictional birds. You know, it's interesting. Early on, I wanted to, you know, the book has a few different storylines, and that's sort of maybe the dominant one, or at least it's the one that people who read drafts of the novel were sort of most into. But yeah, so I created this bird, you know, I talk about things like, you know, you read sort of the back copy where it says, you know, the local people say it holds the fabric of existence together. But it was somewhat of a mystery to me. You know, why I even chose a bird. And even after I finished, I'm like, why did I do that? But recently I was talking to some Jim Saunders, actually, and he was telling me that the spirit of ayahuasca is represented by a bird. So I'm like, well, maybe that's what it is. Because ayahuasca is another sort of theme that comes up in the book.
Well, it's, so do you have any sense of when you got the red jay thread? Was that one of the first ones that you've been working on for 7 years? When the nugget of the whole thing came to you, you know, what was it, I guess?
Right. You know, it was, I mean, you probably know this as a writer. It was like, you know, it was just a feeling that I could do it. It was sort of like a, you know, a feeling I wanted the book to have. And at the time, you know, I was sort of more interested in conspiracy. I had this job after college where I was writing something called This Day in History as a freelance writer. So every day I'd write like 4 stories on things that happened through history. And I started learning about a lot of sort of, you know, factual conspiracies, and this sort of got me going. And, you know, so the early versions of the draft, I mean, it had the bird, but it also had a lot of conspiracies, sort of hackers who have this conspiracy and they're sort of going against these billionaires and the government who have their own conspiracies. And then there's this sort of mystical force that's represented by angels in the book, and they have their own sort of, you know, agenda as well.
Well, so the most the most compelling thing is I love, and the reason why I love this is because I did something somewhat similar, in that where you have what amounts to kind of like this mythical analogy that you're playing with, but at the same time you're interfacing with reality.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that reality a little bit, because, you know, you don't have to go very far to realize not only are they, you know, logging, but that oils, big oil is also involved in this.
Right.
And
Yeah,
then
so you
it like with what's going on right now in the United States with the protests, I mean, so this is a common theme that happens every now and again where they're trying, they're, you know, we've got trans Canadian pipelines that, you know, they've got the tar sands and they, you know, they want to move this oil, this to the United States. It's our dark blood, some
Right.
level. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it's another thing, in the book I actually had part of the story where it's about sort of the backstory for one of these characters, Jack Pale Horse, who's Native American. He had been leading protests against contaminating water on a reservation. But yeah, when I heard about that in the news, I'm like, well, that's kind of sinky, as we say. But yeah, I tried to make, relevant themes, just to, engage people sort of emotionally and, and that's mixed with a lot of, fantastical elements as well.
It's interesting because my whole trip has taken me through a whole range of emotions, I guess. As far as trying to influence the nature of how, you know, how things are, I don't know where is your hope levels these days? I mean, so one of the interesting threads in that intro too is the idea of the Republican presidential nominees whose daughter talks to angels.
And that's another thing that's kind of stinky with the timing that it was, it's a Republican woman running for president. We have a woman running for president who's, technically a Democrat, but I think that there's some resonance with Hillary Clinton and my character. And as far as my hope level, it's you do what you can. I believe I do believe that this one day, human consciousness will change, and what I mean by that is it's sort of like Buckminster Fuller. Like, we have everything we need to make a perfect world, a world of abundance. But we fall short really because of sort of selfish reasons or in various deeply ingrained, issues and that we have as people and as a culture. I do believe that one day, I hope, that people will adopt a new mentality. And I mean, this is just, my effort to try and throw something in that direction. I mean, I don't know, if anyone will get that from it or what, but certainly thought it was worth a try, and it was fun to do, so.
Well, so one, you know, one direction my own research has taken me is toward the history of religions, trying to understand when we have like a moment. I think they refer to when Jesus and Buddha pop up as kind of like the axial age or something. It's like, so I mean, you're tapping into something here. It seems like we went through this moment where there was a lot of people were looking for meaning and they were exploring a lot of different things, you know, moving towards 2012 and stuff like this. It seems like things have kind of quieted down a little bit. But, you know, I've been to Winnipeg and their message hasn't changed, and I don't think they're not in what they're, you know, what they're saying, the message isn't necessarily, they're not after their the ends, what, you know, what they want is not selfish, I guess. You know, so I feel like it's been fun to watch that whole thing develop over the years. But I know that when you're in that stream, you can really get caught up in the idea of, the mission. And I think probably your Invisible Army may have a little bit of a hint of that in there.
I conceived of this novel, The Invisible Army. You know, I imagined this sort of secret organization that was working towards, some kind of like, revolution or consciousness change or what
Which is
have you.
great,
And
right? I mean,
yeah.
we're at a point where we're consumers, and that's pretty much it.
Right. And this has been going on for a long time. It's like, the first sentence on the back cover, cultists have long prophesied a time when mystical forces will lift humanity to its potential. I mean, people have been saying this thing's going to happen for, 100 years at least. And it's who knows? It's nice to I it's like a dream, and to make to make the dream possibly come true, you sort of have to imagine it a bit, and so I tried to imagine that kind of change in my novel. And yeah, who knows? I hope it comes in the near future because, things are bad in the world, but maybe it'll be 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, it's hard to say.
Well, I think one of the tricks that Jesus had to do was instead of saying that it's coming, he had to live like it was here
Right, absolutely.
to manifest the kingdom on earth or whatever. Yeah. Speaking of contradictions, I mean, one of the interesting contradictions you point out is like the idea of New York philanthropy, where you have someone who is definitely helping the earth move, or society move along that scale of taking things out of balance and then doing visible philanthropic works that don't necessarily, it's like these contradictions where they get the ego boost, but at the same time their balance sheet doesn't balance, helping. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. That's
Well, I heard it actually defined in such a way that one writer, I was speaking to some anarchists, and it's like the idea of ironic alienation, where some people, they cannot, those two things that don't compute, they can't live in a world where their life causes harm to others, whereas, and because of that, they act out, or they have to figure out some, and I, it's just the nature of society that our actions, just consuming the way we do, is going to harm someone in some way, whether it's sweatshops or whatever, pollution.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's the reality we're living in, and I think it's been fashionable to say like, oh, I only buy sustainable goods or organic food or what have you, and these are sort of cosmetic changes that people make, and I'm no different really, but I think that people could, we could have a more, responsible, sustainable system. If it happened, more widely, than it does. But it's gonna take, it seems like it'll take some kind of like miracle, because of just, as you said, there have been some changes and, and leading up to 2012 and excitement and I'm somebody who sort of came onto quite a lot of this stuff, actually, sort of after that, some of it at least. And people are still out there getting excited and thinking of things they can do. But it's hard to imagine the sort of incremental pace, leading to the change we need in time. So yeah, I don't know. We need something more, but I don't know what that is. I mean, I imagine a scenario, you know, where it's like this sort of magical thing, but,
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of all our problems are logic problems, but then the solution ends up needing to be, like magic, or, you know, like not, it's like not left brain, totally right brain.
Right.
Yeah, but I wonder, I mean, so, you know, part of the Winnipeg message, if I recall, was that there's a transcendence that's coming. And so an interesting book that kind of spoke to that was a book like Childhood's End, where, you know, where at some point the Indigo children just kind of leave existence as we know it to the next plane of existence.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And where it really is like the next leveling up. But does your book flirt with that idea too?
No, it's kind of like more, it's not sort of evolutionary change. It's more like, view I have that, you know, it's like people need to go through this process of, you know, individuation or whatever you want to call it, awakening or finding themselves. You know, once people go through that, and if they do it honestly and don't get like tied up with their ego, then, you know, they'll probably learn how to live their life better, you know, in a way that's less destructive to the world. So it's just the sort of idea of the novel is that this can happen on sort of a mass scale suddenly. And there's still work to do, and it's not going to be a paradise afterwards, but you know, it's like, the line has been crossed and it's snowballing and, you know, there's no going back. So, you know, I think it's some sort of event like this did happen, that, you know, collective change in our mentality, then I don't necessarily think the world would be so different. It would just be better, you know, and hopefully less war and less, you know, hunger and environmental destruction.
Yeah. It seems like there's a political solution out there. Like we could somehow move from a scarcity economy to an abundance economy somehow, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a tricky thing, politics as they are. I think there has to be some kind of like, you know, spiritual awakening revolution or something, you know, the likes of which, you know, maybe we haven't experienced, you know, for a long time, you know. I mean, you mentioned Winnipeg a couple times. You know, that was one sort of special thing about writing this novel for me is I mentioned I had sort of a darker version of the novel, and then, you know, I wasn't happy with it. The people I gave it to Reed, you know, were, thought it was a bit depressing, and in that version, you know, humanity actually dies out. So I'm like, okay, let me make this more positive. And at the same time, I had, you know, met a couple of guys from Winnipeg, you know, Jim Saunders and Jake Cota, and you know, at the exact moment where I'm sort of thinking like, how do I shift this novel into something more positive, and then I'm sort of seeing their message and getting to know them better, and it was sort of fun bringing in some of their, you know, their motifs and their, you know, their ideas, and some of the, you know, like sort of the Jupiter thing I brought in at that point. So yeah, you know, that was sort of a fun thing for me, and you know, I got a chance this summer to go to Tonkari, which is Jim Saunders founded. It's a new sort of plant medicine retreat near Winnipeg. You know, it's basically about using Amazonian methods of working with plants to discover, you know, new medicines and to also help people, you know, in this transform their own lives, you know, for the better, you know, using ayahuasca and other plants that, you know, local plants up there in Manitoba. Yeah, it was great. And, you know, and I hope that, you know, that they succeed in growing more and drawing some people up there. But, you know, it's an interesting time.
Well, do you think, I mean, so like this is the, I guess that was a thought that I had every now and again. Do you think, you know, I wonder what is a prophet, right? So I looked into it really deeply and, you know, it's like, what is a prophet? And then they receive their revelation and then they relate the revelation and they're just in their flow, I guess is what I'd say, right? And then later it's historians that decide based on the breadcrumbs left behind. I wonder, do you ever take your thought that way? I mean, so like someone like Eckhart Tolle has a real clear message, and you know he had his revelation. He was on his park bench for however many years it was to just kind of yeah. You know, I wonder what it takes to create what amounts to like a religious movement, and like what kind of, you know, time or what kind of, if it's all done on the back end after history's happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to start a religious movement.
It's kind of a scary thing to think about, isn't it? It's like, that's too heavy.
I mean, it's heavy, and it's, you know, what every religion pretty much we've had has sort of been a failure. You know, I mean, not to discredit like Buddha or Christ, but you know, just their followers have sort of been superficial about it, you know.
But it, as far as like meaningful stories, they definitely have all this momentum. You know, another thought is, when does a cult become, you know, like when, there's that zone between cult and religion, you know, it has everything to do with it, probably just size and you know however long it's been around, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, well, I kind of feel like, you know, the cult is, or the religion or the spirituality, I mean, it's you know why I like ayahuasca, for example, is you sit down in the dark with yourself and you're just sort of going through your own thoughts, exploring things yourself. You know, it's not like you're sitting down and anybody's telling you anything. So it's, I mean, it's not, you know, I don't know if like self-discovery can be, you know, a cult per se, or, you know, but yeah.
Well, here's an interesting observation. So right after your title page in the book, you have a spiral, which is similar to the design in Dark City that was the one character, it drove him mad. I'm curious, why did you put that there?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of not something that I fully thought out. I wanted to put an image at, you know, first couple pages, and you know, I the spiral, sort of, you're going around, you're returning, you know, it's kind of like you're returning to the same point and again and again in a way, and you're sort of going over it again, and it's also sort of looks like a bit of like a sort of Stargate, you know, whirlpool type thing. You know, and I my hope, you know, is that when people read my novel, they sort of, you know, fall into it that way, you know, fall down to some sort of like, you know, rabbit hole or something, or, you know, and that's sort of the experience. And you know, and I wasn't aware of Dark City, but I was thinking about it with The Revenant, which was a movie that, you know, came out last year, which I enjoyed, and they had this sort of spiral appearing in that a few times.
Well, I mean, a thought that I'm having based on what we were talking about, the idea of the kind of transcendent large consciousness shift event. I can't, and you mentioned that the book started kind of in a dark place. And so I'm curious, I mean, so we just had the September 11th anniversary. Where are you at with that? I don't know where I am anymore, because again, it's like one of these left brain puzzles that it seems best left to the right brain to just say, well, I don't know what the hell happened, but it was something.
Yeah. You know, we just had like a little mini bombing, yesterday in Manhattan. I'm in Brooklyn, but, so that was like the first, amazingly, I think the first bombing since 9/11. No one was killed, fortunately. But, you know, interestingly enough, the first chapter of my book took place on the roof of the North Tower originally. I was definitely thinking about it. I was, you know, it definitely like burned some sort of hole in my consciousness or what have you.
That was the thought, that this ripple traveled through time the other direction. Like it really, you know, Jake's Stargate theory, that it was this vortex.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wrote that in 2003, so that I'm not saying that I predicted it, but I was certainly interested in it, and I came across, you know, Jake's work on it, you know, where he's saying it's this sort of like mega ritual,
right?
You know, that we're all, you know, all of humanity's eyes were in one place at that time, and we like connected in a way that we haven't connected before.
Are you a New Yorker then your whole life?
I grew up in Washington, D.C., but I lived in New York since college.
And what do you do in New York these days?
I'm a private investigator.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I work
How
do
does
more
one
research.
Get into that line?
Would you say that?
How does one get into that line of work?
I was just sort of, you know, serendipitous. I just met somebody who worked at a firm, and I had some freelance writing background. They needed somebody to do research at courthouses, and so I started doing it that way, and I just stuck with it. Yeah, it's been good. And, you know, I work for myself, so I sort of had the mornings where I could spend on writing. It's been good.
Huh. But so then living in New York, did you have a relationship to the towers before they became like this big deal? Like for a while, it was kind of like so many of us were just glued to the, you know, like going through media looking for quote unquote clues, I guess. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had a, you know, talk about precognition. I mean, I had a party on December 31st, 1999, a big party. The invitation I made had the image of the two twin towers on fire, and it said, is this how you want to bring in the year 2000? So that was, I think it was somewhere in there in my head before it happened. And I mean, I went up there a few times, went up to the, you know, Windows on the World restaurant, So I mean, you know, I had a connection. It was actually in Washington, D.C. on 9/11, but anyway, so I had it in the, you know, the first chapter of my novel was took place on 9/11 on the top of the North Tower. You know, I this part of the reason actually I decided it was okay to cut that was actually when that Joe Alexander video came out, you know, the Back to the Future predicts 9/11. I really liked Jake's message, and I felt like that really conveyed it very well. So I'm like, oh, great. You know, now, and also somebody told me I should cut it, but it was great. I think it was a very powerful message, and I took it out. But then I do have other sort of, I do have another terrorist attack in my book that sort of maybe is evocative of 9/11 a little bit. But.
Well, I think we're moving towards the end of this conversation, but you know, what can readers? You mentioned there's a number of threads. What are some of the other little points of interest that the journey is going to yield? I mean, it's because it's set all over the place. We've got New York City as a portion with Elliot Green and his daughter. And I think she is starting the Invisible Army with Jack.
Yeah, well, his daughter is. Right, yeah, we got the wealthy in New York, the corrupt billionaire and his rebellious daughter.
When you named Bonnie, did you was that 42, that 24, was that just serendipity, or was that a wink?
Wait, what?
So her name is Bonnie
Delamarca.
Yeah, so that's a 2-4, which is a 42.
Oh. Did you? Yeah, no, that wasn't intentional.
Okay.
Good one. There was some, you know, once I sort of got turned on to the 42 idea, there was interesting. I did find, you know, a couple instances of that, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I put a few more in. But yeah, you know, we got New York, we got a lot of the excitement in the Amazon.
And you've been, I think, correct? You've gone to,
right.
I can't say it.
Mayan Tuyaku.
Yeah.
And yeah, Mayan Tuyaku. So that's run by this guy, Juan Flores, who's an healer, indigenous healer, and I mentioned Tonkari in Manitoba. That's Jim Saunders, who founded Tonkari, is one of his students, and sort of the idea, and Juan Flores is working closely with Jim. The idea is to sort of build a Mayan Tiaku of the North. I got a chance to go down to Amazon and experience that kind of world, you know, in the place it came from, and it was great. So there's some of that. There's some ayahuasca. There's plenty of synchronicity. You know, I like to think of it as kind of like a sync novel. And that was the experience of writing it. And then I explicitly talk about synchronicity as well, trying to sort of turn people on to the concept. Because when you understand synchronicity, if you accept synchronicity, you accept that reality has this sort of hidden meaning to it, and also that many, you know, everything's connected and blurs with everything else. And I think, you know, having that kind of worldview is a good thing for the world if more people had that view and, you know, did unto others as they'd have them do unto them.
Are you of the mind that this is something that we can understand with kind of our scientific process, or do you think it defies science and it will always kind of be a mystery?
Synchronicity?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot that can be done. You know, I think I think, you know, there's been compelling studies, you know, that have found evidence of it. And it's, you know, once you experience it, once you experience it enough, you know, you begin to believe yourself. And, you know, I think there's a lot that science is going to do with it. in coming decades. I think it's pretty exciting. I think it's going to have a much higher profile. It could play a role in, the magic we need to sort of unlock to, change.
Okay, so this was your first novel, and it sounds like you spent a lot of time with it. Are you resting now? Are you working on something new? Is this I mean, so it's fascinating that you're a private investigator, because what you do is research, but so what is capturing your attention right now?
I have to say I'm taking a little bit of a rest. It's took longer than I thought, but I'm thinking of working on maybe some articles on themes I'm interested in, and just sort of some small things to try and get my name out there a little bit. And I'm sure there'll be a bigger book down the line, but I'm definitely not rushing it. I have a few ideas, but I want to enjoy, having more free time. So for a while.
And I'm always curious about people's writerly process. Are you somebody that needs to write every day, somebody that does write every day, or is it more of a when the muse is there, then you have to get it out?
I like to, if I can, spend, at least an hour every day or something. But, it's, I think that I'll just have to see. This is like a new thing for me. I sort of had this big project where I'm like, God, like I just gotta finish this thing. And, now that I'm done, I'm sort of like, well, I don't even know what I need at this point. Some people to read the book, I guess, would be good.
Yeah, you're on the promotion end now.
You're
But that was 42 minutes. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
welcome. Thank you.
You bet. You've been listening to William Keefe from 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com. Be sure and check out his book at Amazon, to which we'll link. For more information about the Sync Book, and I want to just say that we're gonna have him back this early winter for an in-depth conversation about the book. Once we dig into this book, we'll get into some of the synchronicity aspects. For more information about the Sync Book, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast and would like more, consider becoming a SyncBook Plus member. Some of the membership benefits include full access to the complete audio archive, discounts on books, behind-the-scenes scripts, bonus audio and video, as well as seasonal online hangouts with the hosts. All this and more can be found at thesyncbook.com/membership. Thanks so much, and it begins.
Thank you.
The end of the Red J.
I used to believe we were burning on the edge of something beautiful, something beautiful. Selling a dream, smoking mirrors keep us waiting on a miracle, on a miracle. Say go through the darkest of days, having to heartbreak away, never let you go, never let me down.
Don't you give up, nah, 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 I won't give up.